Hi, I'm Kathy Moranti, and this is Inspiration for Life Guideposts, February-March 2024. I'll start with overcoming grief. Prayers answered. I believed in prayer. I believed God would heal my brother. When he didn't, I didn't know what to believe anymore. Written by Tanya May Evend, Woolwich Township, New Jersey. He's gone. The text from my mother was the news we'd been dreading. The news I couldn't believe was true. My older brother, Tyrone, had just died from COVID-19. It was 1 in the morning on April 13th, 2020, the day after Easter. My husband, Kenny, and I were huddled in the living room with our daughters, Kenedia and Cassidia. Tyrone was in an isolation unit at the hospital, cut off from us. Lockdown orders had been issued, and no visitors were allowed inside the hospital. Mom and Dad were at their house across town. Mom was a designated family member in communication with Tyrone's medical team. My brother had died the worst death imaginable, alone, with no one there to hold his hand or tell him how much we loved him. I had been praying so hard for Tyrone, nonstop from the moment 2 weeks and one day earlier that he had been rushed to the hospital. The disease came on with terrifying speed. Tyrone was only 47, in excellent health. One moment, he was coughing and complaining of a headache. 2 days later, he texted from his hospital room that his oxygen levels were low and doctors were trying to control his breathing. That was the last I heard from him. I had been so certain God would heal Tyrone. Every time I prayed for him, I imagined his recovery. He'd grown up in church, then stopped attending regularly decades ago. I pictured him breaking out in praise as he was discharged from the hospital. It would be a double healing of his body and his soul. I looked at the stunned faces of my husband and daughters. I had awakened that Easter Sunday wondering excitedly whether God would choose this day to rouse Tyrone from his coma and start him on the road to healing. Now, less than a day later, there would be no healing for Tyrone, no resurrection of his faith. My brother was gone, and my prayers had failed. Tyrone was the oldest child in our family and my first friend. I was born 2 years after him. 2 years later came our sister Terry. Tyrone really wanted a baby brother. When Mom became pregnant with our youngest sisters, twins, Tina and Tony, he convinced himself one of them would be a boy. When they were born, he made a show of refusing to hold them. Of course, he relented. He treated the twins like brothers anyway, staging wrestling matches between them in the living room. Tyrone and I had a lot in common. We both wore glasses due to astigmatism inherited from our father and were deadly afraid of scary amusement park rides as kids. We entertained each other on the sidelines while everyone else went on roller coasters during annual family trips to Hershey Park. Later, we both came to love roller coasters and traveled all over the mid-Atlantic to ride them. Our final ride was on the Sea Serpent in Wildwood, New Jersey. Tyrone's sports were football, wrestling, and baseball. He amassed a shelf full of trophies. Once, a dog got loose and chased him while we were playing outside. Somehow, Tyrone managed to outrun the dog and leap feet first through the open window of a parked car, landing on the seat. To my wide little sister's eyes, he was one of the greatest athletes of all time. Tyrone walked me down the aisle for my wedding. Even after both of us were married and had kids, we stayed in close touch. My one worry about Tyrone was that after he'd grown up and moved out on his own, he stopped going to church regularly. He joined us for our Sunday dinners and attended services on special occasions and holidays. He said he still believed in God, but faith wasn't a priority. I kept hoping my prayers would help wear him down. By the time the pandemic started, Tyrone had divorced and his kids were grown. He sheltered with his girlfriend, her children, and one of his daughters. We still don't know how he contracted COVID. Soon after that last text from Tyrone, he was intubated. I kept texting him, never losing faith that God would heal him. I wanted Tyrone to know I had been praying for him. I read scriptures about healing and texted encouragement to my mom, sisters, and Tyrone's children. I paid special attention to stories about Jesus healing people. Your faith has made you whole, Jesus said. That would be Tyrone's story. I was sure of it. During his coma, he would have a revelatory conversation with God. He would wake up a changed man. He would surrender to the Lord and return to church. As Easter approached, I held out hope that Tyrone would wake up on that holy day. Normally, we celebrated Easter at my Aunt Chrissy's house. In lockdown, I did my best to recreate one of her feasts: turkey, macaroni and cheese, greens, string beans, and cornbread. Spirits were high as we watched a streamed church service, ate our feast, and joined extended family on Zoom. A few hours later, all of that joy was wiped away with a single two-word text. I can't describe the despair I felt when I finally fell asleep. Despair rushed back the moment I woke and remembered Tyrone was gone. Kenny and I had initially kept ourselves composed so as not to alarm the girls. Now I let myself cry. "Are you okay?" Kenny asked. "We've been getting a lot of calls on your phone. You want to call anyone back?" "No, I didn't want to talk to anyone, especially not God." I gave God the silent treatment for 2 days. It was the longest I had ever gone without praying. At last, I was ready to have it out with him. I opened my Bible to Matthew 21:22. "If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer." "Really?" I demanded. "I believed, but you didn't answer my prayers for Tyrone. What's the point of praying and believing if you're just going to do what you want?" To my frustration, God gave me the silent treatment right back. Later that day, my younger daughter, Cassidy, found me on my bed and lay down next to me. "Why did God have to take Uncle Ty?" she asked. Cassidy was 13 and had been especially close to my brother. How was I supposed to answer that question? It was my question, too. I remembered something I had heard at a funeral years earlier. It was the best I could come up with. "Cass, life on Earth is sort of like a pregnancy. It's temporary. When someone dies on Earth, it's actually their birth date in heaven. Uncle Ty is in heaven now with a new life, and he will live there forever. And when we die, we'll go there too and see him again. Do you understand?" Cass nodded. "Sort of." Pretty much how I felt. That afternoon, I went to Cassidy's room to check on her. She was intently drawing. I took a peek. On the bottom of the page was a picture of my brother's coffin at a gravesite, surrounded by people crying. Above, separated by a line through the center of the paper, was a picture of my brother coming out of that same coffin with a huge smile on his face. Jesus stood waiting for him with outstretched arms. "Cass, I love this," I said. "You know what it reminds me of?" The Upside Down from Stranger Things, except in a good way. We had been watching the popular Netflix series. In Stranger Things, characters travel to an alternate dimension called the Upside Down, an evil place full of monsters. Cass's drawing showed a different kind of alternate world. This was God's kingdom in heaven. Somehow, seeing it through the eyes of a teenager, I was able to believe what words alone could not communicate. "This is what I pictured when you told me that Uncle Ty was in heaven," Cass said. I kept staring at the smile on Tyrone's face in the drawing. My brother was a man's man and did not like to smile for the camera. Cass had captured a deeper truth about him. Tyrone really was in heaven. He was healed, excited to meet God, and unable to keep from smiling. God had answered my prayers, just not in the way that I had demanded. I felt foolish for treating God like some genie in a bottle. In my grief, I had reverted to a childish style of prayer. Pray hard, pray often, and if you're really, really good, God will give you whatever you ask. The truth is more complicated. God knows what He plans to do. He wants us to pray hard and pray often because it is through prayer that we align our hearts with His and learn to trust Him. Prayer is a gift, a key to open the door of our souls and invite God inside, not a wish list. I think of that moment when Cassidy showed me her drawing as my Easter miracle. I will never stop missing Tyrone and wishing I had more years with him, more roller coasters. But I am profoundly grateful for the life Tyrone now has with God, and I am grateful that God met me in prayer and healed my heart. I love that image of my brother greeting Jesus with a great big smile on his face. I'm smiling too. Close calls, out of control. I rested the wheel for my son as cars on the interstate rushed by. We were slowing down, but traffic wasn't. I had seconds to steer us to safety. Written by Wendy Owens, Fort Worth, Texas. 1 minute, my 18-year-old son, Carlton, and I were in my husband's brand new Ford F-150 Super Cab. Carlton thrilled to be behind the wheel, heading north in the middle lane of the interstate to pick up lunch from Babe's Chicken Diner House, chatting about a dream home he'd seen online. The next minute, the truck veered left toward the concrete center median. I was about to tease my son about choosing one lane or the other when I heard him make an odd growling, gurgling sound. Carlton? His body started convulsing. Carlton? No response. Something was terribly wrong. Only a few hours earlier, I'd been watching church online with my husband Kevin to start his 57th birthday. The pandemic lockdown had been lifted in Texas, but we still stayed close to home, not wanting COVID to spread through our household. Our oldest son and his family lived with us, as did our youngest, Carlton. Our other son and daughter were at college. Online church with Kevin was a new routine I had established during the pandemic, one of my ways of holding on to some semblance of normalcy when everything else about our lives seemed beyond my control. I like to have things mapped out. Organization was key for me as a longtime educator and a mom of four. Even though I wasn't in the classroom anymore, I worked in the professional learning department of the Fort Worth School District, training teachers. I took pride in staying on top of things. But the pandemic wreaked havoc with my plans. I was anxious about Kevin, who, as a truck driver, didn't have the option of working from home. I worried about the kids having their education disrupted. Carlton, three-sport athlete in high school, had wanted to go to a four-year college and play football, but with his senior year curtailed by COVID, he was taking online classes at the community college and working out on his own. My work had shifted. My team had been close-knit before the pandemic, but doing everything remotely had strained those bonds. I missed the sense of connection I used to have with my colleagues. We decided to celebrate Kevin's birthday by ordering lunch from Babe's. We hadn't eaten at a restaurant since the pandemic began, more than a year earlier, and even carryout would be a special treat. Carlton came downstairs that morning and joined us for church. We were surprised that he was up early. He had worked out particularly hard the night before, so we thought he might sleep in. After the service, Kevin asked Carlton, "Want to drive the new truck and take your mom to get lunch?" "Sure," Carlton said, his eyes lighting up. The truck had been ours less than a week. He took the keys and we went out to the driveway. This F-150 supercab was much larger than Kevin's previous F-150. Its cab had four full-size doors and could seat six adults comfortably. At 6'2" and 205 pounds, Carlton towered over my 5'6" frame, and he loved reminding everyone that even though he was the youngest, he was now the tallest of all of us. He jumped into the driver's seat and waited for me to hoist myself into the passenger seat. We live very close to I-820, which we locals call Loop 820, a six-lane highway around Fort Worth. In no time, we are on Loop 820 heading north. The speed limit was 65, and Carlton accelerated to join the flow of traffic in the middle lane. "Mom, I saw this amazing house online," he said. "What did you like about it?" I asked. He filled me in on the details. We'd gone about a mile when the truck veered left, and he started convulsing. "Carlton?" He was having a seizure. He didn't have a history of seizures, but I had worked with students who did, so I recognized the signs. Carlton's head thrashed from side to side, and his legs moved jerkily. "Grab the steering wheel," I told myself. Because the cab was so big, I had to unfasten my seatbelt and reach way over the folded-down middle seat. I wrested the wheel from my son and steered us back into the middle lane, but the truck was losing speed, and Carlton's spasming legs hit the accelerator unexpectedly. I jabbed the button to activate the emergency flashers. Cars and trucks raced past us. I glanced in the rearview mirror. A big black truck loomed. I didn't hear tires squealing, but I saw the driver yank his steering wheel to the left. He barely missed hitting the back of our truck. Thank goodness there was no one in the left lane at that moment. We were slowing down, but the traffic around us wasn't. All of a sudden, Carlton's left foot slammed the brake, bringing the truck to an abrupt stop in the interstate's middle lane. Carlton was restrained by his seatbelt, but his head and long limbs kept thrashing. From my position leaning over the middle seat, I cast a panicky glance in the rear view again, then in the driver's side and the passenger side mirrors. Strange. Traffic had to be moving at more than 65 miles per hour. Yet it seemed as if I were experiencing everything in slow motion. Cars and 18-wheelers zoomed up behind us, then smoothly slid into the two adjoining lanes, even though there was a relentless stream of traffic in those lanes as well as ours. Approaching vehicles seemed to move around us effortlessly, as if our truck were in a bubble. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I was holding. I heard someone praying. It was my voice, my words, yet I was hearing the prayer rather than speaking it. Dear Lord, please don't let them hit us. Be with Carlton and me. Keep us safe. There was a break in the traffic in the lane to our right. Carlton was still seizing. His feet were not on the either pedal. How could I control the truck from the passenger seat when I couldn't reach the accelerator with my hand or foot? The only thing I could do was grip the steering wheel and turn it to the right. There was no way a more than 2-ton truck should have been able to start moving after being at a complete standstill, but somehow it did. Slowly, the F-150 moved to the right. We made it into the right lane and then into the far right lane of the extended on-ramp. Cars had plenty of time to see us and maneuver away. I managed to steer the truck all the way to the grass near the far shoulder, where we rolled to a stop. Carlton flailing his arms and head for another 30 seconds or so. Then his body came to a rest, just like the truck. His eyes were closed, and he was covered in sweat. As soon as his body stopped moving, mine started shaking. I forced myself to take a few deep breaths. It occurred to me that I should put the truck in park. Carlton opened his eyes and looked around. He seemed very disorientated. I reached over and stroked his arm. He had a seizure, I said, but you're okay now. He nodded and leaned back against the headrest. I called Kevin to come meet us. Then I sat next to my son and tried to make sense of what had happened. When neither Carlton nor I were able to control the truck or the situation, God did, directing traffic around us, protecting us, and carefully steering us to safety. It reminded me of something a worship director had once said to me. We need to plan this service, but leave room for the Holy Spirit. That's what I would do from now on. Spiritual Notebook, a simple dish. It was what my late husband made on our first Valentine's Day, written by Paula Dyer, Great Meadows, New Jersey. Everyone at the office was getting Valentine's Day roses from their sweetheart. Not me. It had been 7 years since my husband John died. I still missed him. This year, I felt his absence more than usual. John could make any day special. Stopping at the grocery store on my way home from work, I found myself thinking about our first Valentine's Day. We spent the day in Princeton, New Jersey, wandered around the university campus hand in hand, lingered in the art museum, explored bookshops. I thought John would take me to dinner, but he had a surprise. I'm going to make you spaghetti all'olio e olio, my grandfather's recipe. John's kitchen smelled heavenly as he roasted garlic and olive oil until golden, then combined the sauce with spaghetti and Parmesan. I knew nothing about cooking, but I knew this dish and this man were irresistible. There in the grocery aisle, I felt an odd nudge. Make spaghetti all'olio e olio tonight. Odd because I don't like to cook, and I'm not very good at it. John was the chef in our house. On my own, I ate mostly prepared foods. I bought the ingredients. At home, I laid them out on the counter, just as John used to. Fumbling with the garlic, I tried to channel John's easy, relaxed presence. Soon the kitchen filled with that same heavenly aroma. Memories of other meals, other Valentine's days crowded in. I set the table and lit a candle. I added salt and pepper and red pepper flakes to the sauce before tossing it with the spaghetti. Then a little pasta water, parsley, and Parmesan. Molto bene. I could almost hear John say. I felt his presence with me as I savored every bite. Making his special dish hadn't been an odd nudge, but a godly one. Faith in Living, my prayer playlist. Heaven loves a joyful noise. Story by Reba McEntire, Nashville, Tennessee. God and music go hand in hand for me. I love to sing for the Lord. Even if you can't carry a tune in a bucket, go ahead and sing anyway. God loves a joyful noise. Here are 10 of my favorite prayerful songs for you to get started. Jesus Loves Me. This is one of the first gospel songs I ever learned from my grandma Reba Estelle Smith, Mama's Mama. I also sang this as a kid in the Edwards Hotel lobby in Cheyenne, Wyoming, in the late 1950s, and earned a nickel for it. The first time I ever got paid for singing. Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone. I sang the updated version of this classic on my Chains Are Gone album. Singing it gives me the chills every time. Because He Lives, I love our rendition of this Bill Gaither classic, My Chains Are Gone. We did it as a shuffle 4/4 Western swing song. I'd Rather Have Jesus. This one speaks to my heart so deeply. The first time I heard it was on Loretta Lynn's album, Talk About a Woman Who Loved the Lord. Softly and tenderly, I have the best memories of singing this with Kelly Clarkson and Trisha Yearwood. How Great Thou Art. This old hymn was one of Grandma Smith's favorites, and I can't sing it without getting emotional. Back to God. I've loved this song ever since I heard it on Randy Houser's album, and it was such a joy to sing it with my friend Lauren Daigle. When the Roll Is Called Up Yonder. This song always takes me back to being in that little one-room church in Chucky, Oklahoma, where Grandma and Grandpa Smith were regulars. I'll Fly Away. This has been a favorite since childhood. I got to sing it with Mama and my sisters, Alice and Susie, at the Ryman Auditorium in 2017. I'm so glad we have those moments on tape. I love singing with my family. I sure wish my brother, Paik, would have been there too. The Lord's Prayer. I got to sing this song at former President George H.W. Bush's funeral. It was the honor of a lifetime. Caregivers, Three's Company. Stephanie and I were loving our empty nest. Could we make room for my 93-year-old grandmother? Written by Michael Thompson, Edmond, Oklahoma. Coffee time, a half hour first thing every morning for my wife, Stephanie, and me to connect. We'd started this little ritual in the fall when our daughter left for college, and now, in January, it had become my favorite part of the day. Doing our morning devotionals as a couple set the tone for the day. It had blossomed into more together time, cooking healthy meals, working out in a spare bedroom we turned into a home gym, cuddling on the couch in front of the TV, date nights. Being empty nesters was awesome. For the first time in our 19-year marriage, I had my wife to myself. I love that we were able to focus on each other. This morning, we read a devotional that Stephanie had selected about the importance of sacrifice and caring for others. At the end, we held hands and bowed our heads. Lord, thank you for all the blessings you've given us. Stephanie prayed, help us care for each other in the same way you care for us. We opened our eyes. I savored a last sip of coffee. I'm going to visit Mama today while you're working, Stephanie said. Mama was my grandmother. What do you think about asking her to move in with us? My chest tightened. What about our empty nest? I thought. The past 4 months had been wonderful. I wasn't ready to give all that up. But I kept my thoughts to myself. We had just been talking about sacrifice, after all. If anyone knew about sacrificing and caring for others, it was Mama. She had always been there for me, especially after my mother, her oldest child, died when I was 20. I know I can't take the place of your Mama, she told me then, but I'm going to do everything I can to try. Mama had kept that vow for the past 3 decades. I wanted to make her life better, as she had done for me. If only I could be sure this was the right choice for all of us. Do you think she'd want to live with us? I said, not committing one way or the other. There's only one way to find out, Stephanie said. We'd moved Mama into a nearby assisted living center 3 years earlier. Her son John, who'd always lived with her, had used a wheelchair and needed more care than she could provide. We found a beautiful 2-bedroom apartment for them, but Uncle John died in December. Mama no longer needed the big apartment or the expenses that came with it. Her mind was sharp. She was in good health for 93 and got around well using a walker. But Stephanie and I worried Mama would get lonely and depressed living on her own. She'd lost most of her hearing. Hearing aids didn't help, which made it hard for her to socialize or participate in Bible study at the center. Our house had 2 spare bedrooms, one that we used as our gym, the other as our guest room, plus a bonus room upstairs. Space wasn't an issue. The timing couldn't have been worse, though. In February, Stephanie and I would be taking a trip to San Francisco to celebrate our 20th anniversary. I spent months planning every last romantic detail. A historic hotel on Fisherman's Wharf. Dinner at a Michelin-starred restaurant. Biking across the Golden Gate Bridge. A chocolate factory tour. And more. We hadn't had money for a honeymoon back when we married in 2002. 6 weeks after our wedding, Stephanie became pregnant. We devoted ourselves to raising our daughter, Micah, our only child. The trips we took were theme parks, ski resorts, and other kid-friendly places. Micah's soccer, basketball, and volleyball tournaments filled our weekends. I traveled a lot for work. leaving Stephanie shouldering more of the day-to-day parenting duties. The rare evenings we found ourselves alone, we were exhausted. Our marriage became less and less of a priority. I told myself there'd be time for Stephanie and me once Michael went to college. And there had been. The past few months had been the most romantic of our entire marriage. I'd never felt closer to Stephanie. Now I worried our new intimacy would unravel. I told a couple of co-workers that my grandma might come live with us. You better be careful, they said. It will be hard on your marriage. That evening, I cooked tilapia in the air fryer while Stephanie made a salad. What did Mama say about moving here? I said, trying to keep my tone casual. She's thinking about it, Stephanie said. I'm pretty sure she'll say yes. I told her we'd love to have her. I took a deep breath. Are you sure this is best? I said. It'll mean a lot of changes for us. If this is where Mama is supposed to be, God will help us figure out the details, Stephanie said. Right there on the table, we made a to-do list. Clear out our exercise equipment from the back bedroom. Donate our unused furniture to make room for Mama's. Paint the walls. Install bathroom grab bars and rails. And add an outdoor ramp. The following week, Mama gave notice at the center. We had 5 weeks to get the house ready. We had so much to get done that we no longer lingered over our morning devotionals. Coffee time started to feel like another thing to cross off our list. One morning, after we'd finished praying, Stephanie's eyes met mine. I know how much you've put into planning our trip to San Francisco, she said. I've been really looking forward to it, too, but I just don't see how we can spare a week away now. Stephanie was right. I swallowed my disappointment and canceled all our reservations. I got refunds on everything except the plane tickets. The airline gave me vouchers that had to be used within a year. Mama moved in with us the first week of March. It felt good to return some of the love she had shown us over the years. But one by one, the little rituals that Stephanie and I had begun fell by the wayside. She wanted Mama to have the hearty food she'd been getting in assisted living. So chicken fingers, mashed potatoes, biscuits with sausage gravy, and ice cream became menu staples. We moved the exercise equipment to the back patio, but it felt too cold to work out. No more cooking healthy and exercising together. After dinner, the three of us would watch some PBS series that Mama liked. The extra-large closed captions could make it hard to see what was happening on screen. Cuddling on the couch didn't feel as romantic with my grandmother there, even though she often dozed off in her recliner. We tried to include Mama in our coffee time devotions, but every word had to be shouted. So much for Stephanie and me starting the day with a sense of peace and connection. Was this really what God wanted for us at this stage in our lives? In mid-March, Micah came home for spring break. With her bedroom right across from Mama's, she felt hemmed in. I love seeing Mama all the time, but I wanted some privacy, she said. Why don't I move the guest bed to the bonus room and sleep there? I'd been thinking I had to choose between time with Mama or private time with my wife, and here Micah had figured out a way to have both while we were all under the same roof. God wasn't asking me to sacrifice my relationship with my wife for my relationship with my grandmother. The life he'd blessed me with was big enough to care for both of them. If I'd talked things through with Stephanie at the beginning, if I'd been upfront about how much I loved having our private time, maybe I would have realized that sooner and we wouldn't have let our romantic ritual slip away. I sat down to make myself a new to-do list. First, I turned the guest bedroom into a sitting room for Mama, complete with her pictures, recliner, television, curio case, and desk. She was delighted. Thank you, Michael, Mama said. I like having my own space to relax. Then, with a twinkle in her eye, she added, I bet you and Stephanie do, too. A few nights later, when Stephanie and I were snuggling on the couch, streaming our favorite show, I hit the pause button. I'm glad we got our TV time back, I said, but I want more. I want us to have our coffee time, just the two of us. Exercise on the porch together, rain or shine. Have a date night every weekend, and a couple of getaways every year. Mama cared for Uncle John, for me, for others, but not at the expense of her marriage. She and Papa were happily married for 67 years. I want that for us. Me too, Stephanie said, wrapping her arms around me. We don't need to be empty nesters to be close. We never did get back to that streaming show. Not long after, I got an email reminding me about our airline vouchers. Stephanie's birthday was in September. The perfect occasion for a getaway. I searched most romantic vacations and started planning. I'd fill in Stephanie on the details while we lingered over our coffee in the morning. I couldn't wait. Story of a Song, Lean on Me, by Roberta Messner, contributing editor. By 1971, Bill Withers had saved up enough money from his job making toilet seats for jets at a California aircraft parts factory to fund studio time. Although he was far from tiny Slab Fork, West Virginia, where he'd grown up the son of a maid and a miner, Withers never forgot the close-knit community where folks always lent a helping hand, no matter what. As he sat at the piano, three little words kept running through his mind. Lean on me. The eternally optimistic tribute to his rural roots, sung with his blend of R&B, soul, and gospel, came out on Withers' second album, released in 1972. The song reached number one on both the Soul and Billboard Hot 100. Rolling Stone lauded it as one of the 500 greatest songs of all time. Lean on Me also emerged as an anthem of unity, carrying people through crisis after crisis, hurricanes, earthquakes, the pandemic. Romantic love, you only want to touch people because they're pretty and they appeal to you physically. Withers said in 2006, the more substantial kind of love is when you want to touch people and care for them when they're at their worst. Isn't that what we all need when we're at our lowest? Somebody to lean on, as Withers' song says. To be our friend and help us carry on. That's all we have time for today. I've been reading from Inspiration for Life Guideposts, February-March 2024. I'm Kathy Maranti. Thanks for listening to Chris.